Hey guys, this episode is brought to you by Wines of Germany. Although Germany is super known for Riesling, and I know I love them, did you know that Germany is the third largest producer in the world of Pinot Noir? Who knew? I know, because I love their Spätburgunder. So make sure that you continue to explore and discover the wines of Germany. You can visit GermanWineUSA.com and shop a wide assortment of German wines on wine.com. Use code GERMANY10 and get 10% off 6 bottles or more of German wine. Cheers! All right, guys. Hi, and welcome again to this week's episode of A Glass for Every Palate with me, your host, Shakira. This week's guest, I mean, man, we are kicking off this new year with just powerhouse women. This podcast, you know, it's quite wine-centric, but it's really about wine, food, and culture. And our guest today, so effortlessly meshes those three things together in the most beautiful and most graciously serving our community. My guest today is Rita Jamet. Hi, Rita.
Hi, Shakira.
I am so excited to have you here today. Wow. I mean, there's so much. Where do we begin? Champagne house owner, restaurateur, Les Dames. How do you say it? Is it Les Dames d'Escoffier? Is the D pronounced?
Exactly. Perfect.
Yay. Les Dames d'Escoffier. I am very, very diligent about my friends' pronunciations because I don't want to mess them up. A word from you means a lot to me, I must say. So here on this podcast, Rita, we go with the story in reverse, right? So today, you and Andre have successfully pivoted your restaurant empire into a champagne powerhouse, and you are so involved. And if you're not following the hashtag Lucky Rita, you really need to, because you'll see some of the best dining ever. But let's go back to young Rita. You did not grow up here in the States. What's the first kind of foray into wine that you can remember that was memorable? Like a glass or a bottle or an experience that really made wine special for you?
Absolutely. So I was born in Saudi Arabia, grew up first in Lebanon and then in Switzerland. When I was in Switzerland at age 12, my dad was a big, big wine lover. And we had a room in the house called the Carnotze, which is just a wine. It was his cellar with a table for dining. And the little closets all had the front of a barrel as a door, just to give you an idea. Yeah, and grapes, grape designs everywhere, et cetera, et cetera. And my dad was also a Chevalier du Tasse de Vin because he loved Burgundy. And my first foray was when we all took a trip. We drove from Geneva to Beaune for him to be intronized or kind of inducted into Les Chevaliers du Tasse de Vin. And I was 12, so at first I wasn't really, you know, I didn't really want to drink wine. But so in order to get water, we had to like bribe the waiter to get it under the table, don't say anything. And then my dad gave me to taste a little wine. At first I was like, oh, this is so new. It's like nothing else I've ever tasted. So I had to open a whole new compartment of flavor memories in my brain and my senses. At first, you know, it's like everything, when you don't know about things, you can't appreciate them fully.
Yeah.
But I just love to see the effect this wine had on my dad and on all these, like, it was 500 people in the room.
Oh, wow.
Les Hospices de Beaune. Yeah, the dinner was just unbelievable. So
I can't imagine being 12 and experiencing that.
It was unique. It was unique. And, you know, I forget a lot of things about my childhood, but this is one I cannot forget. It's ingrained in my memory in the best way.
That is wonderful. Do you remember? Was it a red wine? Was it a white wine? Was it champagne?
No, it was a red wine. It was a red Burgundy. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So when you start there, there's only up that you can go.
Totally.
You know, one of the things that I think people that have not had the pleasure of meeting you is that we both very much believe in energy
And you are such a spark of joy to be around. There is an innate hospitability to you that even if you didn't work in a restaurant, like there's just this very welcoming energy about you. Where does that come from? Is that just naturally you?
First of all, I should say that I feel the same about you. I think more than one time I love your energy. It's being from the Middle East, I think that's where it starts, that and your upbringing. First of all, it implies positivity and then wanting to welcome people and basically have only good things happen. One of the biggest traits of hospitality is people who come to you or your space or your house or your restaurant, they leave better off than when they came in. That's the whole way it works for me. And it's a joy for me. It makes me so happy. Very, very happy.
I mean, that has to be the hallmark of why, you know, you and your husband were able to run a successful restaurant here in New York for so long. And I we've spent a good amount of time together and I always love the stories. You know, when we celebrated the 60th anniversary, it was almost like being a kid in a storybook, like imagining this time of fine dining in New York where you might be seated next to a Kennedy and you know, just the opulence of it all. And then to realize that, you know, between 9/11 and other things, like that world very rapidly kind of disappeared. And the culture of fine dining changed. And you spoke about it before, about the decision to not have your restaurant anymore being challenging, but it's because you couldn't blend or make it the modern day world while still giving what you want to give to your guests. So how did you come to that decision? What was the world? What was the things that you saw that made it seem like, you know what, this might be the end of this era and I'm okay with that?
Yes. You know, I think in life, everything has a cycle and you have to at some point take a little step back and recognize that it's kind of your cycle is done. So now you have to go to something else. In the case of the restaurant La Caravelle, after 9/11, as you know, the world changed completely and definitely the dining scene and people's, there were societal changes. People reacted differently to situations and the fine dining notion evolved into something different. And when we had La Caravelle, we always paid homage to the past because we were a classic restaurant started in the 60s. But at the same time, we like to have our finger on the pulse of what's going on where you are now. And we were able to offer these two kind of showcases up to a point. When at some point, being too much with the present time means confusing and altering what you are really in your DNA, that's the time to say, you know what, I think I don't think it's going to work. So might as well give it a proper ending and then start another chapter. So that's what we did.
Well, it's so amazing. I mean, I remember when I think that we talked about this when Laura was on the podcast about like how fine dining in New York really changed. It used to be the La Caravelle's, the Le Cirque's, where, you know, to be in the dining room, you had to have on a jacket and it was very,
and
very
a tie.
Formal.
Yeah.
And it's it was an extremely formal affair. And
it
then
was.
I think it was really after 9/11 where you had, you know, your molecular gastronomy chefs like Wiley Dufresne and all these younger people, you know, and the city was also going through a resurgence of who was left, you know, like a lot of people left the city and who was left were a lot of these like thriving young people. And the culture of dining evolved there and really the landscape of the city did. I mean, you're a Harlem resident now. Harlem is
so
nothing.
Happy to be. Yeah.
No, you know,
exactly.
But Harlem is so different now. I love that you have always been a champion of not only fine cuisine, but of kind of getting to the authenticness of a culture's cuisine. And celebrating Harlem has been a major part of that for us. You know, what do you, it's not just that you live there, but like you are ingrained in what Harlem is. And, you know, there's a good and a bad side of what Harlem has evolved into. You know, there's a lot of downsides about gentrification, but there's also such a renaissance that is beautiful and celebrated. What do you feel is the most misunderstood part about Harlem now and what it's become?
As you said, I'm completely enamored with our neighborhood. I think Harlem has an incredible community that when you meet the Harlemites, they are so, for lack of a better word, I don't know, they appeal to me because they're genuine, they're true, they're welcoming, they're warm.
Yes.
And elegant. When you see on Sunday, you see the little girls dressed up with the little white socks and the bows
going
in the
to
head.
Church.
I just love it. And the moms with the hat and the nice suit. To me, it just, you know, each time it brings a huge smile to my face because that's very significant for me. It means that there are these beautiful traditions, the family, the friends, the support. I mean, there's an incredible community here of not only young people, but everybody. And that's including with the hospitality. To me, it's just wonderful.
Yeah, there are so many new restaurants in Harlem. It's like mind-blowing. You know, like you don't have to go below 96th Street anymore. To find really world-class cuisine being done. And it's not just sit-down restaurants. I mean, Field Trip is better than, if you haven't been to Field Trip in Harlem yet, we're going to have Chef JJ
on
because he's amazing.
Field Trip is wonderful. And
it's
he now opened a couple more. I think one more he's opening in Rockefeller Center and I think something else. JJ, he's one of my best friends. And I met him when he was the chef at the executive chef at the Cecil. And we struck a friendship from then. I have a huge admiration for him because this is a guy who worked so hard, but he really had that instinct and that drive of his vision. And look where he is now. It's just amazing.
Yeah. And what he, like, I think that there's so much, you know, food, much like wine, there's a story in every dish, every technique of how something is made, the ingredients used, whether it's cooking for hours or it's a quick sear, there's purpose in food. And you can't make a good dish without love. Like you can.
Exactly.
I've had dishes where I'm like, the chef is only focused here on a pretty plate. There isn't, this food lacks love and it lacks soul. And I feel like in Harlem more than many other places, like you just can't get food, like food just has a different kind of soul there.
Totally, totally. And you know, you remember that there was a film, I think it was a Mexican film. Was it like Water for Chocolate? Where basically the idea is you give the same recipe, the same ingredients to two different people and you'll get two different dishes.
Yes.
And if one of them has emotions that like one of them was very sad, she was heartbroken. Well, it was felt in her food.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
It's powerful. And we get the same from wine, right? You have been, I mean, you love wines from all over the world. I remember when you poured at Niche Niche. That was my first Lebanese wine that you poured.
Chateau Misa.
It was, that sticks in my memory as such a, I mean, I had no expectations because I had never had a wine from Lebanon before, but there was just so much complexity and beauty. And it's those moments that I seek to relive over and over again. So you have had wine from all over the world, but you are a huge champion of Bordeaux. Tell us a little bit about, and Bordeaux is probably the region that most people know for upholding the snobby, unapproachable, very expensive first growth bottles. But I mean, through you and a few others, Bordeaux is becoming like it wants to be a drinkable wine. It wants to be youthful. It wants to be enjoyed. Talk to us a little bit about how like Bordeaux became such a part of you because there's a La Caravelle Bordeaux
yeah.
That's delicious.
Exactly, the Listrac, yes, from Médoc.
So good. So
thank
tell us
you.
How you got into doing wines in Bordeaux and how that region just speaks to you.
Well, originally, when we had at La Caravelle, we had already started our champagne. And one of André's best friends was Maurice Lartigot, who was a big gentleman in the wine business. he was traveling through France, and one of the biggest regrets of my life has got to be to not declining an invitation to travel with them. He used to go to the biggest wineries, even the small ones that were going to be discovered, and do the tastings for his multi-million dollar purchases. And I said, no, I'm busy, I'll do it another time. And then lo and behold, things change, and this couldn't happen anymore. Anyway, to make a long story short, during one of Maurice's trips, he stumbles upon this really very delicious little wine. It was called already La Caravelle. So made by a cooperative of several little growers, a number of growers, and because they can't afford to have a winery and to make their wine themselves, so they band together, group their harvest, and there's an oenologist winemaker who develops different cuvées according to the blends that he has, you know, the quality, etc. And La Caravelle was like the top of their production. The top quality. It's not produced every year, only when the winemaker deems it's good enough. So sometimes you'll skip one, two vintages. But the idea of La Caravelle Bordeaux is that being restaurateurs, just like for the champagne, we are our number one requirement for the winemakers is to have a wine that is food friendly and approachable in more ways than one. Not only the price, but the quality, the characteristics. Like, you don't need a degree in oenology to appreciate it. It just makes you happy. It's good. It goes with so many different cuisines and foods. So that for us was the most important thing. Then recently I did also a little more research. There's one type of wine in Bordeaux that I'm completely enamored with, is the white Bordeaux. Uh-huh. I think the white Bordeaux is an unsung hero. This blend of Sémillon and Sauvignon Blanc is magical for me.
So good.
So good. And we also, last year, just before COVID hit, there was an incredible campaign made by the
Bordeaux, women?
CIVB. Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. A strong women that Tali Dalbaha, our dear friend, spearheaded this campaign. And it was a lot of women winemakers or chateau owners or just, you know, representatives or brand managers who came to New York. And they included me as I was here and with my connection to La Caravelle Listrac. And this campaign also was amazing because mostly Bordeaux was not only, as you said, it used to have that image of very stuffy and you know, a little rigid and very haughty and snobby, but also it was male-dominated. And this is a new thing that happened here. It was very fun to juxtapose the fact that it's women making the wine and promoting the wine and being showing their passion for the wine and the terroir and the grapes and everything, but also the fact that it was the large format. The minimum was 3 liters that we could show. So all these wineries and wine houses brought a cuvée of minimum 3 liters. It was spectacular. It
was that so was one much of fun. The best wine media events I had ever attended. Just to give everybody a snapshot of this, we began at our good friend Aldo Somme's wine bar. Rita's was actually the first wine that we had. And then we got on a bus and we went to some amazing restaurants around the city and had these women pair their wines with these cuisines. And it was such an intimate experience. We got to learn so much about these wines, why they work with some great cuisine. That was such a wonderful event. And yes, it was one of the last things I did the world locked down.
Totally. The following week was like the lockdown. So
yeah, and there was such a huge campaign. I think that what I loved about that, Rita, was there was a huge campaign where you guys partnered with restaurants all across the city, right?
Yep,
that campaign
exactly.
Went on for how long, where you could have gotten glasses. These amazing wines were on how many restaurants were it all across the city?
I think around 100, if I'm not mistaken. And I have to say that they played ball. The wine directors were so, and the whole teams, because we went to do the training, and the whole teams were so, so enthusiastic. For instance, Côte or Barboulu, they had to reorder because they ran through it in you know, in like a jiffy. So that was really amazing. It was so much fun. So much fun.
That was a great women-centric event too, about like showcasing women in a way where it's like, you know, I think that you've been such a champion of creating space and opportunity for different women across the industry. You know, when you talk about somebody being a mentor and a sponsor, because those are two different things, and I think you're both. To some people, you know, you're a mentor, and to others, it's just a matter of, listen, if Rita Jemme speaks your name somewhere, she's vouching for you, and she knows that you're going to deliver, and that's a wonderful thing, especially in the time that we're in. You've been a woman in this industry for a long time. How, with everything that's gone on in the last year, what are some of the changes that you have seen that you're happy with, and some of the things that you still think that hospitality needs to do a better job with?
I think that, I think recently there was the awareness that was brought, was groundbreaking. Why it took so long, I don't know. But I think with the help of so many of the players, both male and female, I would say, in the industry, finally, women who wanted to really aspire to, you know, a progression and evolution in their career, development in their career, they were finally able to be heard. I as you mentioned earlier, I'm a member of Les Dames d'Escoffier, and that's really our purpose there. I've been a member, I was trying to remember the year, and I couldn't. This has been that long. So a good 30 plus years, I think. The idea was to be here as a mentor and a supporter and a network, anything you need to help young women, you know, have a successful career. First of all, education, and then career in the hospitality world in a very broad sense that it also included travel, tourism, writing, cookbook, and wine, etc. So it's always mattered a lot to me, because if you have advanced in age and in experience as I have, it's your duty. It's a pleasure. It's an honor to help someone. You see that light in them. You see that flicker, and you're like, ah, my God, let me see what I can do to really help. It just brings me so much joy. I'm almost selfish about it. And whatever I can do is just really wholeheartedly. I will go out of my way to support anyone who has aspirations.
It's so, you know, we need each other in this way, in that we have to lift as we climb always. And it's such a joy to, you know, to experience that and to be able to bear witness to, yes, she really is like that. If you have something where you, you know, she can help you with an opportunity, she will. And that's, you know, that's a rare thing. And I think that a lot of times people think that women are holding each other back. And sadly, sometimes that is actually the case, but it's not the case with you. And that's such a joy. All right. So we've talked about you and wine, and we talked about you, the restaurateur. Now let's talk about fun, lucky Rita. Rita that just loves to entertain, loves to cook, loves uni, loves caviar. I miss going out on Friday nights and running into Rita and Andre at some of our favorite places. How is it now just being able to enjoy eating? Like, you're not running a restaurant. You just get to go out and have great food in one of the best food cities in the world.
Definitely. Well, the iteration of going out now has been greatly reduced since COVID. But yeah, before COVID, I went out so much that because I want to support everyone yeah. who's supporting me, and I'm a gourmand. I mean, I love to eat, as you know, and I also enjoy the artistry and the effort it takes for chefs to produce their, you know, the cuisine that they do, as well as the wine work of the sommelier and the wine directors. I think it's just I love to see that at work, when you see them really, you know, doing their job in such a passionate way, and you learn things and you have fun and you feel good. It's Epicurean at the end of the day. So every time I have an amazing experience, that's why I started the hashtag Lucky Rita. But that's really, there's a
so
sense
fun.
Of wonder. Yeah, aka kid in a candy store. There's a sense of wonder for me when I have a great experience. It nourishes more than my tummy. It nourishes my soul and my spirit, and it gives me inspiration. It makes me happy. So that's what I want to share and encourage people who are working so hard. Because as you know, restaurant is a very, very hard work. I mean, it's just, I don't need to say this. And it, now, even more with COVID, I have so much respect and admiration for the people who are producing still fantastic meals. You know, look at Côte Corinne Steakhouse, look at Jean Georges, look at, I was at Atoboy X Atomix last week. And it was not last week, this week. This week, they have like a collaboration of their two restaurants, the two chefs, outdoor dining, obviously. It was just spectacular. I have yet to post about it because this week was a bit eventful. But it's just moments like that that make me so happy.
Well, they make us happy too. I love seeing your dining adventures. I haven't been to Attaboy or Atomix yet. Those are two restaurants, but I think I've been holding out and really wanting to experience them in the restaurant.
Right. Yes.
But I might have to break and go in and see this collaboration too. You know, I think that the restaurant community is so resilient. It is a testimony to their hard work at all levels. I mean, the people that are still, you know, it's freezing cold and they are still offering impeccable hospitality. They're still smiling through being freezing because matter how many heat lamps there are, it is still quite cold to eat
it
outside in the Northeast in January. But the teams at the restaurants that are still trying to make outdoor dining work, you know, the Coats, the Clays, the Jean, all of these places, you know, their teams from the people bussing your table to your servers, there's still passion for hospitality in what they
totally.
Do.
Totally. And you know, our friend, my dear friend, Bobby Stuckey in Boulder, Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Colorado in the winter, hello. Oof, they're just bussing tables. He's bussing tables himself.
I'm like, Bobby has joined classes and then gone to a start service.
I mean, unbelievable, unbelievable. So much grit and resilience that really kudos, without much help from the authorities, frankly, let's face it, compared to other industries, which is scandalous. It's a scandal. I don't know how that, you know.
And it's such, you know, it particularly, I mean, all over the place, but in New York, you see it so much. You know, the backbone of restaurants, even the most expensive fine dining restaurants, you know, the folks that are keeping that restaurant operational, your busboys is a derogatory term, your back of the house staff that is making sure the restaurant is still clean, your plates are being cleaned, those are not high paid individuals. You know what I mean? Those are people that are willing to work really, really hard to support their families. So to have that industry just kind of left out in the cold, literally and figuratively.
Literally. Yeah.
You know, it's a disgrace, but it's great to be able to still go out and support them. I layer up. I do have to wear several layers of clothes to go and sit outside and eat, but I do it. I do it for the same reason you do, to support it. We have to talk a little bit, Rita. If I love caviar, you do too, but man, oh man, do you love uni? Where did the love of uni come from? You have to tell us.
First of all, originally when I lived in Paris, we eat in the plateau de fruits de mer, the shellfish platter. There was always these little sea urchins that you used to eat, you know, with a spoon. And I just always loved that iodine flavor. Just spoke to me. Maybe because I'm a Pisces, I don't know what it is. But
all then connected.
Fast forward, coming to the U.S. and discovering Japanese cuisine and uni, I was just, I don't know, it just like buzzes in my head and in my spirit when I see that. And then I befriended this lady, this very special lady, Stephanie Mutz, who lives in Santa Barbara. She's a fisherwoman, actually, and she has a business called Sea Stephanie Fish. And when our son Nicolas got married in 2018 in Santa Barbara, we all went there, and a couple of my friends, sommeliers, had said, you must go see this lady. So I made an appointment. We went on her boat, and she actually picks up the sea urchin from the water and brings it, and you open it up with a bottle of wine. It was magical. And ever since, I just, you know, another hashtag, hashtag uni alert.
Uni alert.
So now the chefs or friends, they say, hey, Rita, there's an uni alert going on here. You should look into this. So yeah, it's just so good.
It's a great thing, and it's not an ingredient that people, you know, delicacy, which is also, you know, one of the films from Psalm TV is all about that. And it is a delicacy, but I also think that it's something like, if you just have it with the right thing, it's just yummy. Like, never mind the exoticness of it. Like, it's just like, I call it like sea butter. Like,
definitely. Oh, what a great definition. I love it.
If bone marrow is meat butter, then uni is sea butter.
And sea
it's
butter.
Just quite delicious. I love it too, but I don't eat as much of it I am going to coronate you the queen of uni. But it is really delicious, and it's just a real joy. You know, I think that in the culture of Instagram, sometimes I've seen people get lost in this idea of like, oh, well, there are more important things than blah. I'm like, well, there are lots of important things, but joy is important. And people finding moments of happiness is important.
Definitely, that's the basic of it. But there's also another element that people don't realize. And I learned this from hearing from Michael C. Marusti, the chef Providence in LA, that harvesting sea urchins is actually very good for the environment. Because I don't remember exactly how it went, but it's a benefit when you harvest it. I mean, hello, it's a good conscience too. Why not?
This is one big ecosystem. Like the world, you know, the world remains connected and is always going to be one big ecosystem that we all, you know, like sometimes maybe your piece isn't connected to my piece directly, but in the grand scheme of things, we're all connected. We're all these global citizens, global consumers of things. And also, if you really dive into Japanese food, a major part of Japanese food culture is the tremendous respect that yes. chefs have for their ingredients. And so if you really get to immerse yourself in understanding, like, it's not just this pretty dish on a plate, it's that culturally, if these animals and these things literally like aren't alive anymore for you, you respect it and you give the person that's going to consume it the best expression of it possible. And there's something to be said about that. And that's a part of the reason that I enjoy food. I think that it's an art, and to be able to literally consume living art. I know that sounds really cheesy, but it's true.
It's true, totally.
And I love to cook, and I cook with love, and it gives me joy when someone enjoys the food that I cook. So I totally
get it. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're an amazing cook.
I see what you do on Instagram. Well, that's the other part of Lucky Rita, is cooking for my family and, back in the day, friends, when we could. Yeah, when we could. But it'll come back. And just one thing I wanted to add is coming back to the restaurant industry, the IRC, we should support the IRC, donate, benefit, whatever you want, because this Independent Restaurant Coalition and ROAR also, because these are, institutions that you collect the money, but they help the restaurant industry. So it's crucial. They got to get help from somewhere. And this
Absolutely.
Is what has been started. And it's a great initiative. Both.
It's important. United Psalm 2 is another great organization.
Exactly.
Where they are literally putting money in people's pockets. So it's important to understand that, like, while dining out, I also recognize that, you know, people are hurting economically. So having the ability to still dine out is a privilege, but you're also supporting another business. So it is a way of using your privilege to support someone else.
It is. There were also, I mean, thanks to the pandemic, these good things that started, like Black Wine Professionals, where you're involved, and Julia Coney. There's also Summation Live.
Yes, Anna Christina. There's so many. There's Wine Unified.
With Dylan Proctor. That's it.
Yeah, Wine Unified. Yeah. There's the Roots Fund. There's so many great organizations now. So whichever way you can find to support, you should.
Yep.
Whether it's actually donating money, going out to support, it's all useful. Well, Rita, now is the time in the show where we have a little bit of fun. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. First thought that comes to your mind, no deep thinking, just the first thing you think. Are you ready?
Okay.
I guess. All right. So even though you're a super positive person, we are all human. So if you have a bad day, what do you want to drink to relax after a day that was hard or challenging?
If not a glass of champagne, then a margarita.
Ooh.
I only drink two cocktails, margarita and Negroni. That's it. The rest is champagne and wine. That's it, champagne and wine. So tequila, I adore tequila, but it has to be good quality.
Good tequila.
And I'm very fond of Casa Dragones. My friend Berta Gonzalez, we're actually doing a cocktail together at Côte Korean Steakhouse, Sondre.
Oh, fun!
The mixologist there has created a beautiful, it's coming up for Valentine's Day. So that definitely, I think there's something magical in this beverage, margarita cocktail. Definitely.
Nice. All right. Mm-hmm. So, and if you have an exceptionally good day, which you just want to celebrate, like everything went well with that day, I'm going to guess that it's champagne. Am I right?
It is champagne. Yeah, absolutely. It would be either a Krug for sure. For sure. Krug. If no Krug is available, which is very hard to to think about, I love the Cuvée Grand Siècle by Laurent Perrier. I just adore this champagne.
Okay, literally. My guest last week, Regine Russo, that is exactly what she said as well. I think that is the best cuvée in their repertoire, hands down. It is a little pricey. It's worth every penny. Like if somebody wants to splurge or you just want to celebrate a good day, I am going to count how many people say that bottle. You're the second person literally to bring that bottle out. Okay, if there is a grape or a region that you just don't like, you've tried several of the wines and it's just not your favorite, what is it?
At the risk of being lynched by some, Malbec is not my friend. Malbec is too much. Maybe I haven't tasted the good ones, but it's too much for me. I want to get hit on the head, Malbec would be it. I don't
too
understand
much.
That grape.
That is fair. And then the last question is, what is a region or grape that you think people may not know about, or they might see it and go, oh, I don't know what that is, but that if they tried the wines, it would be phenomenal. What is the region that people are maybe sleeping on that they should be exploring?
Two come to mind. One is the Canary Islands. I adore the wines, Lanzarote. Whew. That's so good. It's funny. It's all island wines I'm talking about now. And then Sicilian wines. I love the smokiness in the Etna. I just love these wines.
And there's volcanic soils.
All volcanic soils. And also to complete departure, I would say still the Loire Valley. I know that it has gotten a lot of limelight, but I think there are so many incredible wines over there.
Absolutely.
Incredible
absolutely.
Wines.
Well, Rita, thank you so much for being here with us. Before we wrap this up, please tell everyone where they can follow you.
Oh, thank you. On Instagram, it's at Rita Jamais, my name, and also at La Caravelle Champagne. Twitter, my name is Caravelle Champ, and that was given to me by my son Christophe back in the day when I started to dabble with social media. He might feel now that he created a Fantasia
phenomenon. Love it.
It's like, I can't stop.
And, you are actually really good at social media. Like, you post great pictures, great videos. I love seeing your grandchildren. They're so cute.
Oh, my God. They're a source of joy, such a source of joy.
Well, Rita, it has been a pleasure having you as a guest. Please continue the amazing work you do in being just a champion of women and of the hospitality industry at large. We appreciate you and everything that you do and just being a great human. My goodness.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Thank you for being you, and you're so eloquent and articulate, and you raise the right questions and the right issues. And this is really so important. We're all in here to support each other and enjoy life as much as we can.
As best as we can. Thank you. All right, guys. Well, this has been another week of A Glass for Every Palate. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
This episode was sponsored by Wines of Germany. All right, so we all know that winemaking is a really, really old thing. But did you know that winemaking in Germany dates back over 2,000 years to the Roman Empire? So, you know, anyone that's been doing anything for that long is going to be pretty good at it. And German wines are top quality all over the country. If you have not begun your exploration of German wines, I encourage you to do so now. From reds to whites to sparkling, they have something for everyone, or a glass for every palate. Discover more about German wines at germanwineusa.com and shop a wide assortment of German wines on wine.com. Use code GERMANY10 and get 10% off 6 bottles or more when you purchase German wines.